I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome MJ Fitzpatrick. MJ is a young Australian committed to changing how we talk about self-awareness. After living through some intense trauma as he was growing up and a near-death experience when he broke his neck playing sports, MJ became obsessed with healing himself and trying to understand why people hide from the world and from fear. After dropping out of med school to follow his dreams and build a business that teaches what he has learned to others, he's now running that business, teaching emotional intelligence as a competitive advantage. As a person, MJ is dedicated and addicted to learning science, experiencing joy, and annoying his partner. MJ, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So let's talk about emotional intelligence. How would you describe it? And what is it about your background that made you realize that emotional intelligence is so important?
So I'll take the second question first. What is it about my background that made me realize emotional intelligence was so important? Growing up, I had very low self-awareness. I had very low emotional intelligence, very low self-esteem, very low confidence, and very low social skills. I was such an intensely logical, analytical thinker. I saw the world in black and white. I saw the world as a series of rules and formulas that I need to figure out, that I grew up with a very distorted sense of how to get along with people, how to interact with other people. And then going through, you know, the pretty significant medical and emotional trauma that I went through there for about 5 years, a forcing function was placed on my life, right? I had to figure out what emotional intelligence was to learn how to not only survive what I was going through, but to get myself back to a place where I was fully healthy mentally, and then beyond that, right? So to getting back to thriving and actually serving other people. So what is emotional intelligence? I'm sure there would be a researcher out there who could give you a better definition than I could. But for me, it's just recognizing that we are emotional beings. The only reason you ever do anything in your life is because you feel an emotion that is either propelling you to do that or trying to stop you from doing something else. And if you recognize that, our entire brain is built to feel and flow and resonate with emotions, that we are wired to connect with the people around us. And the only way you are going to manage to actually motivate yourself and live a successful life is to master and recognize those emotions. I mean, for me, it's the most important skill that you could possibly learn in your life. And so I've dedicated my life to trying to help people learn that.
MJ, I can certainly relate to what you've just described. I studied engineering and worked as an engineer the early part of my career. And I certainly, thinking back on it the way you've just described it, I was certainly steeped in the world of formulas. Mm-hmm. And I probably looked at a lot of things as black and white. I had a lot to learn about social interaction, both from, you know, my own upbringing and also what I studied and what I did for a living. I'm wondering also, as you're describing your experience, I'm wondering whether if you come from a place where your emotional intelligence is low, does it take a trigger incident to kind of wake you up and realize the importance of emotional intelligence?
So I can only speak from my own personal experience. And in my own case, that is absolutely what happened. It was figure out my own emotional behavior or death. Now, that's a pretty intense version of a trigger or a forcing function. But I think what I've noticed, what all successful people do is usually there is one trigger event in their life. And that can be having amazing parents who are raised them beautifully. It's usually some form of negative event. And that initial trigger pushes them down the path of growth. But what they do then is become proactive about growth. They do not wait for the second trigger. In fact, they actually try and predict it. And they study successful people, they study the people around them, and they learn what has triggered them to grow in what area of their life. And they learn what that trigger has taught them, and they take those teachings and instill them in their life and actually be proactive. And the more I get into my work, the more I realize the value of just a simple commitment to no matter what, I will get better as a person. And the second thing is just the power of any sort of intense commitment to change. You know, as I'm starting to see more and more people go through a growth process, I'm starting to realize that there really is no change without commitment first. And it's very easy to say that you're going to commit to something. And I think it's an entirely different conversation to actually give any sort of growth, be it emotional intelligence or otherwise, the true level of commitment that it's going to have to take to get yourself to do that.
MJ, I couldn't agree with you more. And I'm actually reflecting on my own personal experience where I was in my late 20s and got fired from my second job as an engineer because the company didn't have enough business. And it was that trigger event that caused me to make a commitment to change and not want to be an engineer anymore. And it was the beginning of lots of changes that I've made over the course of my life. So I think you're like 100% right that you do need a major commitment to constantly change and grow. And I think a trigger incident is, at least for me, it's been a major part of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I was waiting for this call today, I was just lying in bed thinking, wow, I am so happy I broke my neck at 17. And it's so crazy to say that out loud, but it is so true. I was comparing like the amount of joy and gratefulness that I have for my life and the amount I'm able to help people, which is so precious to me, and comparing that to the corporate job that I would have been working in, how confident I would have been, how emotionally intelligent, how self-aware, and seeing that huge contrast and just thinking, you know, that trigger event, which used to give me all sorts of mental health problems, is now something I look at and actively feel joy. And I'm so happy that I lived through that because I would not be the human being I was today. And I know that with total certainty had that not happened to me.
So is there something that you teach people in your programs about how to react to trigger events that can make it, I guess, turn it into something that is a positive force for their lives?
Absolutely. So that's such a deep question. So let me break that down. So the first thing in the overarching principle, and really one of my favorite quotes of all time, is that the more you sweat in peacetime, the less you bleed in wartime. And I love that quote so much. And I think every day of my life, I am preparing and training my brain for the next trigger event. It is inevitably going to happen. I cannot control my future. We are human beings. Things are going to happen to us which are non-ideal. And I'm very aware of that. But my life right now is fantastic. Everyone that I love is healthy. Everything is going well. And that doesn't stop me from thinking that at some point in my life, I'm going to go back into wartime. Now, I think the key thing for people to realize is there is times of peace in life and there are times of war. And when you're in wartime, a couple of things have to become very, very important to you. The first is just ruthlessness. If you are under pressure, if you're under the pump, if one of you or your loved ones is in business trouble, is under a health scare, your commitment to whatever has to happen to get you out of that, you have to attack with a ruthlessness. The second thing is training your brain, and you do have to train it, and it is always easier said than done, to always incessantly find an empowering way to move through the world and find a way that entails gratefulness. And I'll give you a small example of just how this happened recently in my own life. But I had to have an MRI, and for any of the people listening who haven't had an MRI, you're essentially in a coffin that is extremely claustrophobic for anywhere between 15 and 30 minutes. It's so loud that it's like Daft Punk is playing a concert right next to your eardrum, but they've had too much to drink that night, so the beats don't quite make sense, and you're not allowed to move. And if you move, they have to start it again. Now, I was in this little coffin, and I started getting claustrophobic, and I realized I'm getting claustrophobic because my mind is not focused. Right. And so I stopped and I said, well, hold on a second here. What is something else I can focus on right now? And I started getting intensely curious about the machine that I was in and started thinking how grateful I could be for the very fact that I'm actually living in a time where we can do something like have an MRI. Right. Me having the same injury 2 centuries ago, and that's it. Right. I'd probably get a leech put on me somewhere, and that would be healthcare. So absolutely there are things you can do. I think realizing that you cannot control your life to the vast, vast extent of things. And things are going to happen which you are not going to necessarily wish happened, but that doesn't matter. What matters is how you react to it. And you are always in control of your emotions. You are always in control of how you're looking at your life. And it's really the only thing we can do. but there is always an opportunity to find what is happening to you as a lesson, to take what it is coming on the chin and look at it as a challenge and prove to yourself how strong you are and prove to the world how much you can help the people around you. You know, I really think about people who have just lost a family member, and instead of making it about them and their own suffering, they're trying to help the people around them. And I think that you see these little moments of human beings just being incredibly inspirational. My favorite story of all time is this, is there was a woman who was in the London bombings, and she was sitting behind the person who was on the bus. And as the bomb went off, she immediately lost both of her legs and was covered in burns. And as she was lying there waiting for the ambulance, she started thinking to herself, wow, isn't this amazing that I live in a time where a stranger is about to come and collect me? And when she got to hospital, she woke up and she had Jane Doe written above her head. And in that moment, she thought, wow, I'm in a place where humans have dedicated their entire life to getting better at a craft, that they are now performing on me, and they have no idea who I am, no idea where I've come from. They don't know anything about me, and yet they're still helping me. And there is a woman in a moment who has chosen to feel love at a moment where everyone else has chosen pain. And so I think there is no excuse. There is no excuse. And it's confronting to often hear that, but there really is no excuse for how you're interpreting any situation. You are in control of it. Your brain is going to do it whether you like it or not. And I think recognizing that and finding the miraculousness, even when life is tough, is really a skill that will tide you in for the rest of your life.
And I think also it's a really important skill for anybody who's in a leadership role to be able to control his or her emotional reactions to the circumstances, particularly those that are very challenging, because you need to be in a position where you can inspire others to achieve greatness in addition to whatever you're achieving yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the biggest thing that people look to for leaders for is certainty. And a lot of people talk about how lonely it is as a leader. And what they're talking about really is there are times when as a leader where you can't fully discuss what's on your mind, because if you do that, you will make the people you are leading feel a lack of certainty. And it's your job to make them feel certain. And so again, of course, I think the key thing for people to realize is you are in control of your emotions, right? That doesn't mean that you won't feel anger when someone gets annoyed at you or feel frustration. But the second you're aware of that emotional response, you have the ability to change that. And you have the ability over time to retrain specific emotional responses. You just have to be willing to do the work.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit, MJ, about what you just said with regard to projecting certainty to the people who are your followers. And I totally relate to the self-doubt that you may not be able to share with anybody as the leader. So if you do need to project certainty, what are some of the ways that you can do that and deal with whatever self-doubt is going on in your head?
Okay, so there's two parts to that question. Let's start with self-doubt. So self-doubt is a creation of your mind, and it is something that is being created to protect you. It doesn't feel like that, but you have to make a key distinction in your own mind if you want to get good at emotional intelligence, that everything that is coming from your subconscious brain, which self-doubt is there to protect you. Your subconscious's mission, what it is programmed to do, is protect you. Now, the key difference to understand is that what you think protection means are not the same thing. So for example, you may grow up realizing that getting rejected sucks, or failure sucks, right? Failure is the worst thing that could happen to you as a human being. So your subconscious learns, all right, we want to avoid failure at all costs. Well, if I make MJ feel a whole bunch of self-doubt, or if I make David feel a whole bunch of self-doubt, well, then we are decreasing the chances that something is going to happen, which will actually cause David to fail and then feel that feeling he wants to avoid. So when you start looking at these mental patterns like that, you can actually change and move through them much, much easier, right? You're able to calm doubt down. You're able to communicate with doubt and actually realize in a different form, this really is just something that's trying to protect you. Now, the second thing is, how do you project certainty? I think certainty is a skill. I think confidence is a skill, and it has to be trained. And there are a number of ways you can go about this. You know, obviously, confident people move their body, talk, and gesture in a certain way. And if you want to start getting more and more confident and projecting more and more certainty, the fastest and easiest thing that you can do is change the words you use to describe yourself and your world. Our brain is listening to everything that we say to ourselves, both internally in our own mind and also out of our own mouth. Your brain is listening. And what it is doing is constantly deciding who you are and what you mean to the world by the words that you're using. You know, you could make a pretty strong argument that the language that you use is literally the code of your brain. And if you start changing your words to project more and more certainty just with the actual words that you use, good things will start happening to your brain over time.
What's an example of one thing that you can change in the words that you use that will help you project greater certainty and feel more confident?
So every single time someone says, "How are you going?" you have a free hit to describe to your brain how you are going. Now, remember, your brain is just going to prove whatever belief you have about the world, no matter what it is, right? This is what confirmation bias is. So I'll give you a great example. This may be a cultural thing to Australia, but when I ask people how they're going and they say, "Yes, I can't complain." Or I say, "Okay, how are things going?" And they say, "Yes, not bad." Right? And you think about that. You're just telling your brain, "Okay, well, how is life?" And your response is just, "No, it's not bad." It's not that it's not good. It's not that it's, you know, it's not horrible, but it's not bad. So when someone asks you how you're going, for me, the response would be, you know, "Things are going really great. I'm feeling extremely confident in how I'm growing at the moment, and I'm really looking forward to serving the team." You start saying that 3, 4, 5 times a day, and there's nothing arrogant about what I just said. Like, it's a very beautiful and humble way to express your own growth. Your brain is going to start creating a story that is built off that, which will then make you feel more confident. You'll then do better things, and you'll just confirm that confidence, and it'll work back around the start. And so whenever I'm trying to learn anything, the first step for me is to try and work it into my language and start describing that new way of being to the people around me. And very, very quickly, that new story will get created.
Yeah, that's a great example. MJ, how long do you think it takes people to start to make shifts in their emotional intelligence that can have a measurable result?
So there's two parts to any change. And people always leave the second part off. So the first part is you have to actually do the work to create the change. And so in the example that we just used, it's actually speaking in this new way, right? That's the first part. The second part of change is that you have to go out into your life and actively look and search for places where the change is working. I mean, this is a long discussion that I'll try and summarize as much as I can, but because of the way your brain is built, unless you actively look to find and search out places where the change is working, you will not see them even if they're there. You will not see them because of how the brain works in confirming things. So you can start noticing changes in 3 or 4 days, right? If you consistently and consciously change your language in 2 weeks' time, as long as you're looking to see where it's working and you're noticing when it's working and focusing on it, right, in 2 weeks' time, you will start noticing big, big shifts in how you process information, how you're reacting to events, all because you've started putting in the work.
Okay, that's a great answer. Now, MJ, one of the things that I'm thinking about as we're going through this discussion is you've offered some great strategies and tips about how we can react to circumstances around us that will make us a stronger person, a better leader. And I'm wondering, if we know that we need to make some changes in our own reaction and our own emotional intelligence, how do we figure out the best way to get the help to do that?
Well, it's a really powerful question. So one of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten was, don't take advice from someone unless they have something that you want, because there are very few people in the world who are actually trained to give advice. So when most people are giving you advice, what they're really telling you is how to live life if you want to be like them, or how to live life that they wish they had have lived. So unless when you talk to that person, you actually want to live some aspect of their life, right? You would not take advice from someone who is constantly in debt and never has any money on how to be a millionaire. Yet we forget this principle all the time in leadership situations, in business situations. There are 1,000 people in the world who will give you advice. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, once I know that I'm not going to take advice from someone unless they have something that I want, I'm going to go and find people who I respect as leaders, who I respect as emotionally intelligent people, and figure out how they do what they do, what words do they use, how do they talk about things. And the key thing to realize when you're learning any new skill is there's three aspects to it. There's the simple stage, right? If you're learning tennis, the first six tennis lessons that you go to are amazing because just hitting the ball over the net is cause for celebration, right? And hitting your first backhand is the cause to go crazy. But then the skill starts getting extremely complicated, right? You realize that just by holding your racket 4 or 5 degree angle one way, you're going to completely change the spin of the ball. But then what happens is over time, if you keep playing tennis for years and years and years and years and years, it starts becoming simple again, right? So it's like when you get in your car and drive now, you don't have to think about where you're putting your feet. You just drive. It's become one chunk. And so realizing that oftentimes you'll hear advice from people and it sounds too simplistic, right? I was listening to a conversation with Warren Buffett and Bill Gates the other day. They were asked what the secret to success is, and they both just said curiosity. Now, that's because they've lived through so much of life that it's quite simple to them now. But when they say curiosity, what they're really saying is 1,000 things at once. So realizing that even if advice sounds simple, it just means that it's probably true. You just need to learn to understand it. And the last thing, and this is, I think, something which is my own philosophy in life, is I really genuinely believe that humans always know what the next step is. It's just that they have to get themselves to the place emotionally where they're willing to give themselves permission to find that place. I believe that so strongly, and I've seen it in my own life and in people that I've worked with lives. And so if you can surround yourself with the right people, surround yourself with people you admire, and you can actually go to that place to ask for help and really know what you need, I think good things will happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think asking for help is very important. It's really hard to get for people to figure out what kind of help you need. You have mm-hmm. to figure out what it is yourself. And when you ask for it, people will generally respond.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that actually leads me to something else that you and I talked about briefly before we started recording this show, which is the explosion that's going on in the coaching industry. There's no barrier to entry to call yourself a coach. And if you understand that you do need help with something and you're looking for someone who has something to offer that you want, how do you figure out what the best solution is? Is it a coach? Is it a peer support community? Is it both? Whichever path you decide you want to pursue, how do you find the one that's the best fit for what you need now? I'd love to hear your thoughts about this.
Okay. So I've worked with both. I've worked with business coaches and I've worked with peer support groups. I find peer support groups quite powerful, but just to take the business coaching thing first, I think being, and as you've just spoken so beautifully, I think being extremely clear on why you want a business coach, what you want them to teach you with clarity, and what does success look like in that relationship, right? That's the first thing. So before you go out into the endless mass of business coaches out there in the world, that's the first thing. The second thing is I would be stunned if there is a business problem you have that there isn't free content that's extremely high quality on YouTube, probably talking about that exact same thing. I'd be stunned if there wasn't a podcast or series of podcasts which you could listen to probably get the help that you need. If you then still want to find a business coach, well, then a couple of things. Number one, do they actually have a business that you admire? Now, there are a lot of business coaches in the world who do not actually run a business, right? I don't think they make enough money to pay their bills. Sorry?
And have never run a business.
Yes, and have never run a business. So, like, there's that. And that's a big deal, and that's not something we should just gloss over. Have they actually run a business? The second thing for me is, are they trying to actually just fit me into a system? Are they trying to diagnose me? Or are they listening to me, asking me questions? And are they manipulating their method, their mindsets, their language, and their approach to fit me? For me, that's the sign of a coach who at least has his or her heart in the right place. But it's not about them. It's not about you learning about how amazing their system or content is. But it's about you and your challenge and them coming to your world and actually trying to understand things there. And then I think either the third or fourth thing is just, are they helping you, right? Have a standard and are they helping you? What does success look like? My sales are increasing. I'm getting better feedback from clients, whatever it is. And judge them against that metric. You know, one of the key questions that I ask all of my incoming clients is, what does success look like to you between us? If I knock this out of the park, what has happened? And what metric are you going to judge me off? And that's what I'm hammering every single time. And I think unless you're doing that level of thought before you go and try and find a business coach, it's probably not going to be worth your time.
And what about peer support groups?
So I am actually all for peer support groups. The ones that I'm in are super informal. They're just in basically WhatsApp groups. I think finding them would be quite difficult, but if you can find the right one, I think they're wonderful. I think instead of it being an explicit coaching relationship, you can get 5 or 6 or 7 just different opinions on the thing that you're going through. I know EO has a very, very good reputation. I'm not actually in it, but it is on my list of things to get around to. I love their model, which seems to be based around unless someone has personal experience with something that you're going through, they're actually not allowed to give you advice. I really think that that's the type of thing that we should be leaning towards unless you want that key accountability and specificity that a coach can give.
MJ, why do you think it's so hard to find a good peer support group?
I'm not actually sure. I don't have a good answer for you to that. I'm not sure. I just know that in my own life, it's been difficult to find. It could be that I'm not looking effectively enough. It could be that my hypothesis is just flat out incorrect and I'm just blind. But I think knowing what you're looking for with clarity is the key difference there. So then when you go out into the world, you can actually filter these things that are in front of you.
Do you find anything counterintuitive about being in a peer support group?
Interesting. Do I find anything counterintuitive? I think something that I have to be very careful of when I'm in these peer support groups is not placing someone who has, you know, a profound level of business success compared to mine on a pedestal and not just taking their advice, you know, for what their word is and still challenging things. And also the simple fact that I'm in a peer support group, treating myself as a peer, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. not putting people above and or below me and really always focusing on, you know, we're all just exchanging ideas. No one's trying to prove their way is right or wrong. You know, anyone who's trying to prove that they're right, I think doesn't have the right idea in a peer support group. And it's always, always, always just about giving value. I mean, that is the rule to live by. And I think that's maybe not counterintuitive, but it's always worth reminding ourselves again.
It certainly is. MJ, who do you know who's done a really great job at smashing plateaus?
Wow. Who do I know personally?
Yes.
Wow. So interesting. I think my partner's been quite amazing at smashing through business plateaus. I think a number of my close mentors, there's a couple of good friends that I have who run their own companies that have been around the world, and a number of clients that I have. I think the biggest plateau that I see people break through in, I mean, I can think of 3 or 4 clients that I've got at the moment, is leaving corporate behind when you've got a mortgage, when you've got kids, but realizing it's not for you anymore. And that year, 1 to 3 year process where you're not at corporate anymore, but your new business isn't working. I think that's an intensely difficult period to thrive in. But when you break through and you get to the other side, it is so worth it. And I think seeing those things every day like I do is incredibly inspiring to me.
That's great. And what's up with MJ? What do we have to look forward to from you in the near future? What's coming up?
Well, great question. So to be honest, I'm just still getting a lot better at my craft. I've been doing this for a year and I've made some big breakthroughs and I can certainly see things in a different way than I did a year ago, but I have a lot more learning to do. I have a lot more understanding to do. And really for me over the next 12 months, it's going to be about scale. It's going to be about trying to reach the most amount of people that I can because I'm in a place where I'm confident that I think I really can help people. And now I need to work on getting myself and my name out there. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm producing plenty of free content all the time, trying to give as much as I can out into the world and really building that key sense of community.
That's great. And how can listeners learn more about you, MJ?
Please jump on my website, mjfitzpatrick.com. I give 99% away of my content for free, and that's not lip service. That's actually 99%. Only until this coming Monday will actually even be something you can pay for. All of my speeches, all of my blog articles, all of my podcasts, all of my videos, they all go up for free. The only thing that you have to do to get them is just prove to me that you take action. And all you have to do that is just send me an email. It's very straightforward on my website. I'll send you a link and it's beautifully arranged. I even go to the effort of making sure it looks pretty for you. And by all means, there is a hell of a lot you can do to help move forward in your own emotional intelligence just by the free content on my life. And if you want to join up to getting that free content and spend the next 15 years never paying me a dime, you are more than welcome, and I would love to have you.
Wow. MJ, that's very powerful, and it's a great offer. So I encourage listeners to check out your site. I've been there, and yes, you do, in fact, offer a ton of great content for free. So thank you so much, MJ, for coming on the show today. I really appreciate your willingness to share some content here with our audience and to discuss some really deep issues that are really instrumental for us all to change and be better people in the world. So thanks so much, MJ, for coming on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been MJ Fitzpatrick, a young Australian who's committed to changing how we talk about self-awareness and really doing a great job at it. Thanks again, MJ.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.